Meanwhile, closer to home we have the Kuiper Belt. Millions of objects, some huge and some like little planets, out there in the solar system. So what is there, and who was Mr. Kuiper? Here's the man who found the belt, David Jewett at UCLA. Could you introduce me to the name Kuiper? Whose was it before it became a belt?
Kuiper was an astronomer who was active in studying the solar system almost before any other astronomer. So in the 1940s, he started looking at things in the solar system and made a number of important discoveries about properties of bodies. For example, he discovered methane in the atmosphere of Titan just by taking observations with the biggest telescopes he could get his hands on. And because he was kind of ahead of his time, he has a very good reputation in this field. One thing he did not do is predict the Kuiper Belt. He actually anti-predicted the Kuiper Belt. So he wrote a paper in 1951 stating that this region beyond Neptune must be empty because Pluto is a massive planet, is what he said. Pluto is a massive planet with enough gravity to scatter objects away. So even if it had been full in the first place, it would be empty now. The article is pretty clear about that, but people somehow want Kuiper to have said the opposite, because the opposite is the truth. This region is full of stuff, which we didn't know until 1992, but it's absolutely chock-a-block full of hundreds of thousands of objects, 100 kilometers across and bigger, and then much larger number of smaller bodies, like billions of things bigger than a kilometer across.
How could you not notice that?
Things are very faint. So when you look at an asteroid or some body in the solar system, you see it in light which really just came from the sun. So it's like looking at a mirror. The light, it bounces off the object and comes back to you. But as it leaves the sun and goes to the object, the light gets fainter with the inverse square of the distance. So if you take something 10 times further away from the sun, it gets fainter by a factor of 10,000. And so the Kuiper Belt is far enough away that that geometrical dimming is fatal.
Was he still around, Kuiper, when they discovered Pluto and realized how big it was? Well, small it is.
The issue of Pluto's size is kind of a weird one because you know the history of that. It was discovered by Percival Lowell, who was responding to an order, basically, from his boss, although his boss by that time had kicked the bucket, to find a planet. So Lowell predicted a planet beyond Neptune. And his reason for doing that was that he saw deviations in the motion of the planet Uranus that could not be explained by gravitational tugs from Neptune alone. So he figured there must be another planet pulling on Uranus to change its position. So he worked it out. It was incredibly complicated. And he had a prediction for exactly where in the sky to look to find this new planet. And then he hired this guy, Clyde Tombaugh. Hey, go and find this thing. It's really important. So Clyde Tombaugh did what he was asked to do. And he found Pluto not too far from the predicted position. So the assumption was, that's it. That's Lowell's planet. The trouble with all of that is that the prediction that was made by Lowell was based on faulty position measurements of Uranus. So we now know that all the work he did was absolutely spurious. It was based on nothing at all. And it was simply a matter of chance that Tombaugh found something near the predicted position. However, because they expected to find a planet, immediately Pluto got the label. That's it. That's a planet. And to be a planet, you have to be pretty big. And so people assumed it was a big object. So the first articles were saying things like, well, it could be as big as Jupiter. Jupiter is 11 times the size of the Earth and 300 times the mass of the Earth. Then it shrank a bit. Oh, it's only twice the Earth. Okay, it's about an Earth mass. Okay, it's maybe a little bit less than an Earth mass. And all through the 20th century, the estimated size of Pluto became smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller until now it's down below the moon. We now know exactly how big it is because we've been there and so on. But it's really a tiny body. Kuiper was of the opinion that Pluto is big because he looked at it through the 200-inch telescope in Palomar, Southern California, and he thought he saw the disk. He thought he could resolve the disk of Pluto with that telescope. And we know now that that's absolutely impossible because Pluto is too small. So we don't really know what he saw, but I think he saw what he wanted to see.
A tradition in some parts of astronomy, but what are you doing personally with the Kuiper Belt in terms of studies?
I discovered the Kuiper Belt in 1992 with a telescope in Hawaii. And I worked on it basically exclusively for maybe a decade after that, finding a whole bunch of unexpected things. So the orbits of the bodies are divided into different groups. We have essentially different dynamical families that tell us something about the origin of the solar system in each case. We found a good measure of the mass of the material in the Kuiper Belt. It's presently about 1/10 of the mass of the Earth. So there's not much material at all, but that turns out to be super important as well. We mapped the individual properties of the brighter objects. Most of them are so faint you can barely see them. It's a little dot and you can just measure the position and fit the orbit. But for some, we can take a spectrum. We can measure the composition. We can see ice in these bodies from absorption bands that only ice has. And we see other molecules that also have a signature in the infrared spectrum can be detected. I measured the heat, believe it or not, from some of these things with a radio telescope. And the heat is a good way to estimate their size. So a whole bunch of things.
And how are you continuing it now? What specific things are you concentrating on?
Well, the most recent thing I did related to the Kuiper Belt concerns objects called Trojans. They look like asteroids which occupy the same orbit as a planet. So Jupiter has two families of Trojan asteroids. They move ahead of Jupiter by 60 degrees and behind Jupiter by 60 degrees. If you look at them in a map, they're like a swarm of bees following the planet. Well, it turns out that those Trojans could well be captured Kuiper Belt objects. In fact, the prevailing theory is that they were captured by Jupiter from the Kuiper Belt at some distant time in the past. Recently, my former student, Scott Shepard, discovered Trojans at Neptune as well. So what I did was compare the Trojans at Neptune with those at Jupiter and compare those with each other and with the Kuiper Belt. And if those bodies came from the Kuiper Belt, you might naively expect they would look basically the same. They would have the same color. They'd all be equally red or not red. The result is that they're totally different from the Kuiper Belt, unless you do something funny to them to change their colors on the way in. So I thought about that. One model is that when the body comes in from the Kuiper Belt, it is warmed by the heat of the sun. Volatiles, on ices and things on the surface, basically evaporate, off they go, and that changes the composition of the surface. So maybe it's reasonable to think that the Jupiter Trojans were affected by this heating process because Jupiter is only 5 times the Earth-Sun distance away. But Neptune is 30 times the Earth-Sun distance away, and the temperature of Neptune is basically the same as the temperature in the Kuiper Belt. So although you could have a process that modified the Jupiter Trojans so they don't look the same as the ones in the Kuiper Belt, it's hard to imagine that would happen at Neptune's orbit. It's just so cold, so far away. So I put the word conundrum in the title of my paper. I called it the Neptune-Trojan conundrum because basically I took an observation which cannot be explained. That's always the best kind.
Where do you think the Kuiper Belt came from?
Kuiper Belt, we think, is composite of several different things. But the most important part is simply a remnant of the disk from which the planets formed in the beginning. So the solar system is 4.5 billion years old. It has this kind of disk-like planar structure. The inner part of the disk formed planets pretty quickly. But the time to grow a planet increases dramatically as you move away from the sun. So when you go beyond Neptune, the time for material to glob up and make a big body becomes so long that it doesn't happen. And so no huge body ever grows. So we think that Pluto-sized things could grow there, but probably not much bigger objects would grow in the Kuiper Belt. So the most important bit of the Kuiper Belt is a remnant of the original disk of the sun from which the rest of the solar system formed, pretty much unchanged, except for some collisional processes, since the beginning of time in the solar system. But other parts of the Kuiper Belt appear to have been added in. So when the planets grow, they create a hell of a disturbance in the disk nearby, like sticking your fist into a beehive or something. The bees come out and they're buzzing around. So the planet suddenly appears. It disturbs the orbits of bodies nearby, and many objects are thrown out of the solar system. Many objects are thrown into the sun, but some are thrown into the Kuiper Belt. And so that's the second component of the Kuiper Belt, a series of captured objects that have, again, been there for a long time, almost certainly for a big fraction of the age of the solar system, maybe more than 4 billion years, but they're somehow less original than the primordial component of the belt because they were formed closer to the sun than they are now. So the significance of the whole thing is that by studying this Kuiper Belt, we can try to figure out stuff not only about the origin of the solar system, but about how it's evolved since the formation time. And so, for example, we know now, which we didn't know before the Kuiper Belt, that the planets have orbits that are larger than the ones they had when they formed. So Neptune, for example, has moved out probably from 20 AUs from the Sun, 20 times the Earth-Sun distance, to its present distance of 30 AU. Uranus has moved out, Saturn has moved out, Jupiter has moved in. And we know that because we see the dynamical fingerprints of that in the orbit distribution in the Kuiper Belt. And you could say, well, big deal, who cares? That turns out to be fantastically important, because what it means is the solar system cannot now be seen as this endlessly repeating clockwork thing where everything goes round in the same circle and it's the same every century. Oh, there's another one. It's not like that now, because the sizes of the orbits have changed. And that means that the strengths of the gravitational interactions between the planets have changed. And it raises the likelihood that there have been catastrophic events in the history of the solar system, big disturbances that throw objects around in ways that we didn't understand before. And so it's totally changed our dynamical picture of the solar system and our understanding of how it got to be the way it is. But the next big question, although you didn't ask it, the next big question is, can we apply what we find in the solar system to the planetary systems of other stars? So we have lots of new data about planets around other stars from Kepler and other telescopes. We begin to sense that many of those systems are not like our system. And so the big question now is, okay, we learn a lot about the solar system, but how can we extend that information and that knowledge to other places?
The dynamic, changing solar system and its cousins out there. David Jewett is Professor of Astronomy at UCLA. The Science Show on RN.